Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Lepuy-De-Vin Group conference call. I will now turn over the call to David Lepuy-De-Vin. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Okay, welcome to the unusual call to have in July. We're gonna have a guest, Tony Dwyer, who I'll introduce in a couple of minutes, and I was explaining to Tony that we only get about 6 weeks of summer, so I've asking people to take 30 minutes of their only of 6 weeks of summertime. So thanks for dialing in. I'm sure I'll get a few on the repeat as well. So just to sort of let you know, clients, where we are on the year, and the reason I'm having the call in July is because in the last couple of weeks we're getting a lot of angst from clients, nervous clients. What do we do? Should we go to cash? When client called, wanted to be transferred all to the bond market. So I thought we'd sort of give an update here of where we are. Just to sort of give it in perspective, the Dow is about minus one for the year as of this morning. The Dow is representing the 30 large U.S. companies. The broader Standard & Poor's 500, which is representing largest 500 companies, is about plus two. The Toronto Stock Exchange is about half of 1%, about 0.5. The bond market in Canada, as measured by the Canadian Universal Bond Index, is minus one. The U.S. midterm bond index, as measured by the ETF TLH, which is midterm bonds, is minus, U.S. bonds are minus 3.5. And if we've been holding Canadian cash, we'd be earning about 1.25. U.S. cash has been increased this year from 1.25, now it sits at 1.75. So that's kind of where we are, and I think a lot of clients have had a lot of angst. Now, I want to go back to where we were in January. And in January, I felt the need to have an early January conference call because there was nothing, absolutely nothing out there saying recession, but there was a lot of indicators that were showing that the investor optimism was way, way too high. And when you get investor optimism way too high and overly bullish, you tend to get too many people jumping into the pool at once. And when everybody's in the pool, the pool count can't get a lot higher because they're already in. So everybody who's optimistic tend to be in the market, and that, to us, said that we were long, long overdue for a correction. Now, we're not going to sell everything. As you know, we raised a little bit of cash, and we did get a correction, and Tony will go through that. I think Tony's got his dog there, but...
sorry about that. I'll mute it for a second.
We were about 11% correction. And the market is, as such, in the year, we've not only got a correction in duration, but we got a correction in time. Now, when I came on in January, I said the market was screaming for a correction, which we got. And then I needed another conference call in February to calm investors' nerves, saying, oh, my God, the sky is falling. I also want to point out that this market cycle has, you know, we have had an unprecedented run in the stock market, and it's been sort of a generational opportunity. But that being said, stock markets don't die of old age. As long-term clients know, we need certain conditions to be prevalent to get a recession. Corrections happen and recessions happen, and there'll be another one. But Tony will go through the fact that you know, we don't have the conditions at this point, despite the angst seems to be coming from Donald Trump and trade wars. My opinion, a trade war is really a tax. And if in Canada you go shopping and you need to buy some Heinz ketchup, and you have a choice, you could buy French's ketchup made in Canada, or you could buy Heinz. The Heinz ketchup is now going to have a tariff, so it's going to cost you 50 or 60 cents more for a bottle of ketchup. That's a tax. Trade wars and tariffs historically have not created recessions, nor have increased taxes. We don't like them. But at the end of the day, the yield curve and monetary policy is what's going to create a recession. So I welcome Tony to come on the conference call. I want to reiterate to clients, we're not married to research or recommendations from Canaccord Genuity, nor were we at National Bank. And if you can remember, at 17 years at National Bank, I never once had a seminar or never once a conference call with Stefan Marianne, because he completely missed the recession, and which we got right. We really didn't see eye to eye, and in my opinion, he was wrong more than he was right. So, again, just because we worked at National, we didn't have to follow advice. Tony and I see eye to eye at 99% because he's a yield curve and monetary conditions follower, and when you have someone who thinks like you do, you think they're an absolute genius. Again, Tony was one of the guys I actually followed when I was with National, and he's a frequent guest on both BNN and regular on CNBC. He'd be one of the guys I would follow before, and so it's a real treat for me to be able to work with a guy that actually takes my data that I look at and expands on it and has even more. So I've talked enough. I'd love to... Tony, if you could take it over again, the reason for the call, worry about Trump, worry about the markets, and are we better in cash? Are we better in stocks, in your opinion, or bonds?
Right. Well, thanks, David, and thank you for the kind words and having me on the call. And I actually think it's still a pretty exciting environment, because when I look back, I've been doing this for a long time, since 1987. And when I look back at my career, corrections are only considered natural, normal, and healthy until you get them. So if you go back to how you were speaking incorrectly, when we spoke in January and talked about how there was far too much economic and especially investor optimism, that's something that sets itself up for a correction. And nobody cares that you're calling for a correction then, because it's going straight up. Remember, the S&P 500 was up 7.5% in the first 3 weeks of January, and obviously that's not sustainable. And what was really interesting about that had me a lot more concerned then than I am now, is that there's a measurement called the Investors Intelligence Survey, and it measures newsletter writers. Now think of any time you've turned on the news or opened up the newspaper or clicked on the internet and saw, what you see is the negative stuff, because it's what sells. You never see the dad that's out in the backyard pushing his kid on a swing set or rowing a boat in the lake. That's not news. What makes news and interest is selling. So to have 66% of newsletter writers bullish and only 12% bearish, they're basically giving up on any downside. In other words, as David said earlier, everybody was in. That was the time to be cautious. Now what we have is the tax cuts, and we have fundamental backdrop of still in credit that is commanding, and in my opinion, when I look back over the history of the marketplace, it's commanding that you buy into weakness versus sell into weakness. And it's one of those things that each time a correction is going to feel different. It's not going to feel normal. By definition, if it did, it wouldn't correct. And the Trump tax and tariff trade war and tariffs clearly are giving that kind of angst. I look at the last 3 weeks, and all the emerging markets are getting killed. Financials are getting killed in the U.S. Industrials are down. And it's just, you don't know what to do. It's not like everybody's selling them. There's just nobody to buy them, because they don't know how these trade wars and the rhetoric is going to heat up. So what I'd like to do is just remind everybody, what drives stocks? When you put it all aside and I look at the history of corrections outside of recession, what is the fundamental backdrop? And clearly, earnings are going to, you would have to have an economic catastrophe globally and in the U.S., to have the earnings number come in below my current $160 estimate for S&P operating profits. I'm even a little bit below the consensus. You're going to get somewhere north of a 4% GDP quarter in the second quarter. We're halfway through the year. So for that 2018 estimate, given that CEO confidence, small business confidence, and household consumer confidence, they're all right up at really an all-time high, in the highest level, right up bumping up against the highest levels of the cycle. So given those three things, the confidence levels at both big business, small business, and households, coupled with you're already halfway through the year, you would have to have an economic catastrophe given the Trump tax cuts and regulatory reform to not hit that number. So my point is that should be it's highly likely that number's even too low. So what that means is the market, if you trade on the end of year number of 160, you're currently trading at only a 17 multiple. Historically, the market trades at a 20 multiple or a 19 multiple when core inflation is exactly where it is, between 1 and 3%. So what is a clear sign of a recession? If the only thing that can drive a sustainable drop in stocks, I'm not saying that you can't correct, but a sustainable drop in stocks is a recession. How do you know when a recession is coming? It's when you get an inversion of the yield curve. Every single recession since 1954, the last seven cycles, you have had an inversion of the yield curve prior to a recession. So we can keep trying to pretend it's different every cycle. We always do. The Fed comes up with some reason it's going to be different. People like me come up with some reason it's going to be different, so you buy our newsletters. But what it ultimately comes down to, it's not different. The San Francisco Fed actually did a study for this cycle, and they said that quantitative easing and the change in the risk premium didn't matter. It's still an inversion of the yield curve that's going to drive a recession. We still have not yet inverted. We're getting closer. I think it's at the 2-year, 10-year U.S. Treasury yield curve is at 27 basis points. So that's pretty close. Here's the interesting thing. From the initial date of inversion going back over the last seven cycles, the S&P 500 is up a median 21% over the next 18 and a half months. 21% over the next 18 and a half months from the initial date of inversion, it has not yet inverted. Out of those seven occurrences, there was only one time where you had reached the peak prior to an inversion of the yield curve, and that was 1973 when you had Nixon problems. You had an oil embargo by Saudi Arabia and OPEC, and you had double-digit inflation. And clearly, there's some Trump issues, but you're nowhere near double-digit inflation, oil, and an oil embargo. So the point is, you are so far. History shows that you are so far from a peak, much less a recession, that you don't want to be getting too negative. So again, the time to be negative was earlier in the year. If I look at even the last three cycles, what you get is the last three cycles, you got a median 34% gain over the next 22 months. So the point is, everything is looking good still on our end, and history shows you don't want to feed into the weakness, you want to buy into the weakness. So I don't want to on you, David, but that's what we're looking for.
Just to remind listeners, they may not be as frequent viewers or as commanding as to the language, but an inverted yield curve means that short-term interest rates go above long-term or mid-term interest rates. And every recession, I've been in the business since 1988 and as the retail portfolio manager and Tony 87, we've seen three recessions. Every single one of those, we've had short-term rates above longer-term. In fact, going back, I think, 200 years, every recession is preceded by short rates above long rates. And so the thing is the yield curve, the bond market is the smartest animal in the planet, and they price in interest rate expectations and rates rise when the economy is good, and right now we're in a rising rate environment, but you can't have a recession unless you invert the yield curve, which means short rates have to go up. The earliest we could invert is late 2019. Now, that's in the United States. I will warn viewers that the two-year Canada and the five-year Canada were running about 192. You could invert the curve in Canada with 2 to 3 rate hikes, which is why the Canadian dollar has been weakening. Yes, trade wars are worrisome for Canadians, but the real reason is that the yield curve looks vastly different in Canada. The 2 years are 0.6% below U.S. 2 years, which means that the Bank of Canada is going to trend very carefully. And if we raise next week, that's probably a one and done, and then you get further interest rate differentials between Canada and the U.S. as the U.S. Continues to raise rates in a strong, 3 to 4% GDP growth economy. So at the end of the day, really what we're saying, our clients are up about 3% year to date, which is still a heck of a lot. We're just past the halfway point. And I mentioned in January how spoiled we were with, 5 years of returns in the teens. not every year, even in a bull market cycle and an up cycle. Clients can remember in 2012, we corrected right at the end of the year, quote, went off the fiscal cliff, and we ended up with kind of mid to low single digits. That was not a time to panic. And just because we're kind of feeling like we're treading water here only up three doesn't mean we're going to hit the wall and we're going to collapse. That's the main point. Just because we sort of feel like you're a gerbil or a hamster on the treadmill right here doesn't mean that things are collapsing. And by the way, it's interesting. Every day we get, I feel like Rocky Balboa, like bang, bang, I get hit, Trump, another tweet, and the market doesn't like it. But it also isn't collapsing. If it was so bad, why isn't the market down 20%? Because earnings, as Tony said, earnings are too strong, dividends are rising. It's just too good. You got a rising profit stream. And cash and bonds look incredibly unattractive. So capital flow has to go somewhere. And everybody that gets nervous and sells goes to cash and bonds, they're not happy. So they're looking for an excuse to come back. So, Tony, again, thank you very much. I'd love to open it up for just a few questions. Our number one question came from a few people, and that was the shape of the yield curve. And, you know, there was some New York Times articles talking about the flattening of the curve and how dangerous it was. Tony, thanks for pointing out that actually when the yield curve flattens, actually stocks do really bloody well. Yes, we're late in the cycle, but it's like a baseball game. Just because you're in the eighth inning, you can't phone, honey, I'll be home in 45 minutes. It might go to extra innings. There's no time. Stock market cycles don't end at a certain time. It's not a football game. Not a hockey game. We don't actually go by the clock.
Nope. And it's funny because let's say you even believe that it could be different this time, David. We look at various credit stress indicators such as the Chicago Fed, National Financial Conditions sub-indices. And just so for the clients, just in case you're wondering what that is, it's basically one of the Fed districts has a measurement of credit stress. And every time that you're about to go into a recession, these credit stress indicators spike upward.
Right.
So within these indicators, there's 105 indicators. So if you don't believe that it's the same as it's been over the last seven cycles, and you look for times where there's ever been credit stress, and the U.S. especially, we're a levered economy. If you shut down credit and I don't have access to credit as a consumer or business, I'm going to slow down my production, slows down earnings, slows down spending, you end up in a recession. That's why credit is so important. And I've yet to see a credit crisis happen without any signs of stress in the credit indicators. And just they're still, even though they're up a little bit from the low on fears over Donald Trump and the policies, they're not even close to historically high. They're actually much closer to being historically low than they are being stressed. So there's just so many different angles that we can look at that where it would actually be historically unique to have, you know, a market that goes sustainably lower on negative economic activity. And as you said, David, it doesn't mean that you can't have weakness. Folks, we can have weakness. We had a 12% drop in January into the first 2 weeks of February. It's not whether you can have weakness. It's what do you want to do with it? And historically, the market goes with the direction of earnings, end of statement with a period. It doesn't change. So until you can predict those earnings go negative, which you can't at this point, you don't want to be too negative.
Right. Operator, can we open it up for a few questions?
Yes, sir, absolutely. So as a reminder, if you'd like to queue up for a question, please dial 01. If your question has already been asked and you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound sign. Our first question comes from David Watkins. Please go ahead.
Hi, David.
Hi, David. I just got a question for Tony. He's commented about the economic performance being very strong, and it certainly is with respect to earnings, dividends, and so on. Is there a one-to-one correlation between economic performance and the actual performance of the market?
By one-to-one, yes, actually. When you need a recession, which creates negative earnings, which creates sustainably negative market, you can have temporary correction without a negative economy, and that's what makes it bounce back. So I'll give you a few examples, David. The 1987 crash was not the peak of the cycle. That happened in 1989 when United Airlines was trying to get money for a leverage buyout and was denied from a bank because the yield curve had inverted. 1994, the Fed doubled interest rates, and it slowed down the economy dramatically, but it proved temporary, and you went back up. You had never inverted the curve. 1997, Asian economic crisis, Thai baht failure, almost down 20%, recovered very quickly. 1998, Asian economic Russian debt default, long-term capital management, the market went down 20% in a nanosecond, only to recover and make a new all-time high within a month. So even think of last cycle with 2005 when GM and Ford and the other autos went into the high-yield status. That didn't do it. It caused a correction, but it was temporary. Again, as long as the economy is positive, corrections are temporary. So I'm sorry for the long-winded answer, but it was an important question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We don't have any more questions at the moment, but again, to queue up for a question, please dial 01 on your keypad.
Tony, I guess we covered it.
Fantastic.
Okay, thanks very much. As usual, if there's something that pops into your mind, send us an email, give us a call, anyone at the Lapointe Event Group. I've got Mark Rinford here with me, Aaron Hoffman Research, Fletcher Hemmons, and Darcy Crowe's calling in from home. So anybody that has anything, let us know, and we'll do our best to answer it. And if we can't answer it, you'll hear from Tony.
Thank you very much, David.
Okay,
have a great day, everybody.
Okay, bye now.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Lapointe Event Group conference call. Thank you for your participation and have a nice day.
Operator, how many people called in?
Yeah, hi. There was about 140 participants.
Wait 1 minute.